Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
We've been told for, here's like an analogy that might explain. So we've been told forever, like you shouldn't be hungry. Like hunger is a bad thing. So when people feel hungry, they feel like they're doing something wrong. Well, what if I told you like hunger is one of the mechanisms that's used for longevity? You will stay alive, healthier, with more vitality if you experience sporadic hunger. It's one of the healthiest things you can do. All of a sudden that reframing, it's like just changes the whole landscape. Like, and that's true, by the way. People have this like thing of like, I'm never supposed to be hungry. That's not true.
We are here because we know the outcomes in our lives are within our control. That taking absolute ownership of how we eat, sleep, train, think, and connect with each other is how we'll optimize our health and happiness. That chasing excellence is how we grab hold of what is possible. Our mission is to live on the run. Always chasing, never stopping. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Chasing Excellence. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Patrick.
We are diving into our two-minute drill. Two-minute drill, for those folks who don't know, is when I dive into my Instagram DMs, where listeners of all sorts have sent us lots of really good questions. And I pull apart and pull out some of the really good ones, some of the stuff that certainly is within the realm of things we talk about, but often probably not enough to quite do a full episode on. So your goal, our goal here is to kind of get through 10 or 12 of these questions with the goal of like, 2 minutes or so, which is why we call it 2 minute drill. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
First one. If you could add new movements and remove some other movements within CrossFit, what would they be? And it wasn't specified games or training, so I'll let you kind of play around with whatever answer you might got.
Okay. So I'll start with the add, and I don't know if there's any remove, but I'll start with add. And I think that something that everybody could add in their repertoire a little bit more of their training is more horizontal rowing movements. So you think about like the kind of different major kind of planes of motion that our body does. And, you know, there's obviously pressing and pulling. There's also pulling and pressing with the lower body as well. If you think about like all the different things that we do, like every sort of lower body pushing is squatting. Any sort of lower body pulling is like pulling off the ground, like Olympic lifts or deadlifts. Any sort of upper body pushing is like push up, bench press, ring dip, overhead press, jerk, handstand push up. And you can kind of see how those kind of run the different gamuts of like a dip is like down, a push-up is straight ahead, an overhead press is over your head. When we think about that in terms of rowing movements, you have the same thing from down to up in terms of the Olympic lifting or summative high pulls. You have certainly have plenty of the overhead with jerks, presses, handstand push-ups. With pulling movements. So you with pull-ups and chest to bar and things like that. The thing that we kind of miss a little bit is that horizontal pulling motion. So it shows up just as rowing. I mean, rowing is the only place it actually does show up. And it's a really important kind of plane of action for the health of your shoulder and good looking back. So I would, so it'd be an accessory movement. I would not put it in for Metcons for time because it'd be a strict, dumbbell bent over row. I think that everyone should be incorporating that type of movement, whether it's a double or it could be a barbell, but more horizontal pulling. So torso comes down to almost parallel to the ground, and then you pull your elbows back behind you. It's exactly like a ring row would work as well. It's almost the opposite of a push-up. So that's what I think everyone could add in. And then from a competitive standpoint, I would love to see running in the open. Like, gosh, I would love to see running in the open. And they can do it. For sure. They've done 30-foot walking lunges plenty of times and handstand walking in the lunges, meaning that people need that much distance to be able to cover horizontally. You could bring a really, really nasty workout with 30-foot shuttle sprints in it.
Yeah, I was going to say shuttle sprints here, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you can imagine a workout, something like super simple, two dumbbell snatches. So right arm, left arm, shuttle down, shuttle back. Four dumbbell snatches, four shuttles. You know, you could see the sequence and you go six, six, eight, eight, AMRAP 10. And it would be just like this phenomenal. You'd be able to get running in the open. Totally measurable, totally fair. So I'd love to see that. And then at the games level, I would love to see a few things. One being more change of direction. So at the basic gist of it would be maybe a little bit more athleticism. But like a, it'd be boring to watch, but like they've done broad jump before. That's not really a change of direction. But that's the other thing they could incorporate more is like relative power. Every sort of time that we see power displayed, most of the time it's done with absolute. So how much weight can you lift through an Olympic lift? And very rarely is it relative, meaning like explosive to your relative to your body weight. So think like max vertical jump, max broad jump, things like that. And then change of direction stuff as well. So like think of like 5'10 agility, pro agility is like you're changing direction really fast. I think those things would be really, really cool. Maybe another one would be, which I'm actually surprised they haven't done, is non-alternating pistols. So let's see people do 20 reps on one side without switching legs. Every single time we've seen pistols forever, we have never not seen that. It's always been alternating. And I think you're missing a massive component. Plus, it makes judging so much easier because you see the lockout before the foot hits the ground. It's a better test, in my opinion. Like a much
just
better
because
it actually involves the balance that we want to see in a pistol.
I was going to say, is it also the endurance of it? Like, can you do 10, 15, 20 on one leg, you know, straight?
Yeah, I just think it's like similar to like dumbbell snatches. We have not yet to see like just stay on one side for a little bit. Yep. And it always just gives this kind of like, it doesn't to me attest quite as much the capacity of kind of the bilateral aspect of left, right. If you kind of always get to move, it's easier. I mean, it's easier from a stamina, from a endurance perspective, you could argue easier in terms of work capacity.
Yep. And then you sort of alluded that you might not have any, but remove anything popped into your head to remove?
I don't know what I'd like to see gone is that paddle at the games. Like, gosh, like every single year if you're going to bring out the paddle, like it's just crazy to me that we haven't varied away from that thing. I get it. They were expensive or whatever it is. You had to buy all these things. And so you want to use them year in year, but like combine it with something else. Mm-hmm. Like how many times have we seen swim paddle? I think we've seen swim paddle 4 times at the CrossFit Games. Like, do swim clean and jerk. Do swim. Like last year's swim event was awesome at the pool. Love it. And if you want to bring the paddle back, but then have people jump on C2 bikes when they get back in and then jump back out. Like enough of that combination.
Got it. All right. Next question. I sometimes struggle with the in the moment criticism. When I get called into my boss's office, I prepare by reminding myself that any negative feedback is a chance to improve, that any weakness he identifies is a place I can grow stronger, and that this will be a learning opportunity. But when that negative feedback comes, I still find myself getting quite emotional. I don't want to be quote unquote that guy who gets upset when faced with criticism and really do want it, but it's like my thoughts and subconscious actions aren't in line. What can I do?
This person's awesome. Cause they're saying like, totally. Oh, like it's amazing. Right. Like this self-awareness and what they're like. Okay. Really you don't have to do anything cause you're on the right track and you have this awareness and it's just going to take time, honestly. Cause like, yeah, it sucks and it might suck forever. But you're on totally on the right track. Is this awareness and the fact that you're preparing yourself before you go in there. And you know that this is going to be good for you. It's like, That's awesome. The only small things I would do is potentially like reframe it a little bit. And reframing is so powerful. Like we've been told here's like an analogy that might explain this. We've been told forever, like you shouldn't be hungry. Like hunger is a bad thing. So when people feel hungry, they feel like they're doing something wrong. Well, what if I told you like hunger is one of the mechanisms that's used for longevity. You will stay alive, healthier, with more vitality if you experience sporadic hunger. It's one of the healthiest things you can do. All of a sudden that reframing It's like just changes the whole landscape. Like, and that's true, by the way. People have this like thing of like, I'm never supposed to be hungry. That's not true. Mm-hmm. So reframe hunger. Now reframe what you said is, I love it. When you go in, your boss is going to give you, and you said the words you said in there, I think was like negative feedback. That's, mm-hmm. was that a word?
Something like that. Yep.
Yeah. I think actually, it's not negative feedback.
Yep.
Yeah. It's not negative feedback. It's advice. Mm. So don't even think of it as feedback. It's not even feedback. It's simply advice. Boss is calling you in and he's going to give you some advice. Now advice, it's different. It's not about the past, which is what feedback is. Advice is about the future. Mm-hmm. And it's simply that reframing of like, instead of these are the things you did wrong, it's like, hey, these are the things you could mold and kind of shift and think about going forward. And that little bit of reframing goes a long way. If people don't resonate with the hunger one in terms of like how to reframe things and the power of reframing, Febreze, you know, like that thing that makes your apartment house smell good. Mm-hmm. When that first came out, the way that they marketed that was like, if your apartment smells bad or your home smells bad, use Febreze to fix your bad smelling home. Mm-hmm. And no one bought it because it was framed as your apartment smells. If you buy this, you're the smelly person. Mm-hmm. And they reframed it as the product didn't change at all. All they did was reframe the marketing to be, this is the reward after you clean up. So if you are a clean person, this is the little, like little bow tie you put on the end. This is the bow you put on the box when you're done wrapping it. When you're all done with your neatness, this is the reward you get is this fresh smell. And all of a sudden it's like one of like the most popular consumer products, like in the history of the 20th century.
Yeah, I don't know if this is exactly the same thing, but as you were saying that, what popped in my head is Red Bull. And one of the things that, you know, Red Bull obviously is wildly successful, but one of the things that they were able to lean into in the early days was the idea that if it tastes this bad, it must be working or it must be very effective, right? And so there's something about that reframe where it's like, oh, I'm not doing this because it tastes good. And like, that's what I'm doing it for a purpose. I'm doing it so that I can go, whatever, ski down the mountain. And that in and of itself is kind of a useful reframe too.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's so much power in the way that you, it's perspective, right? It's the way you view the world. And so just kind of tie it all back. Instead of a feedback, just look at it as advice. Yep. Love that. And other than that, like you're doing it. Like this guy, this girl is totally doing it. It's amazing. So on the right direction. That self-awareness is so powerful. Because honestly, awareness, and the person said like in their subconscious, is using all the right words. Mm-hmm. Oh, the awareness and subconscious are diametrically opposed. You can't, like, awareness will melt the subconscious. It will melt the ego. Now it doesn't do it. It doesn't like, it's not like putting a microwave and the iceberg melts. It's like taking an iceberg and putting it in Montana. Mm-hmm. It might take decades for it to melt.
How do you find balance between chasing and relaxing? I'm a student athlete, a track and field runner, and I'm dealing with quite a bit of anxiety, especially from school. I'm passionate about school and running, but I find myself constantly checking that I'm being productive, which makes it very hard to relax or be with friends. How can I find free time without feeling like I am not chasing excellence?
We've gotten this question a lot, and it's so cool that this is who our audience is. Like, I think it's amazing that this is, the people are like such hard chargers that they're like, and you and I we've both shared that we struggle with this. We have a hard time sitting down watching a movie because like, what am I doing? I'm completely wasting the precious minutes that I have in my life. And I would answer it the same way I answered the previous one is the way you frame it. And you have to look at it as though you're not, not being productive. What you're doing is, and you speak it to a lot of this in other episodes, you know, the power of stillness, the power mm-hmm. of solitude, the power of intentionally detaching to create the space necessary so that when it is time to go, you can go. So, you know, the most famous case of this is Bill Gates takes a 7 to 10 day trip every single year to literally just walk in the woods and read books, just like think week, just like totally detach. And it's the way he frames it. He's not being lazy. He's not being productive. He's not putting off the important stuff. He's using this to create to charge the battery so that he can fire on all cylinders, that he can. And I've seen this, people that don't do things like this and don't, you know, and entrepreneurs, it's called a clarity break. There's a lot of different forms that this takes, whether it's 15 minutes in the morning, in the middle of the day, or the evening. A lot of times that's done with journaling or meditation or something of the sort. Other people do it for an hour a day or an hour a week. Other people might do a 2 or 3 hour a break once a week. Other people might do a day a quarter, or you do what Bill Gates does, is you take a week a year. I don't think there's a right or wrong to it at all, but I do think it's massively important to figure out what it works for you. You know, I'll share the way I do, and maybe you, Patrick, can do yours, but I do it every single morning. I am kind of religious with my, I used to call it my morning routine, and what I'm finding is it's my daily routine. Like, just like so, constantly auditing, and the auditing is the right word. It's not, people say like Kobe Bryant popularized edit your life. It's not edit your life. Edit is like going back and like fixing, this was a comma, it's supposed to be a semicolon. That's what editing is. Auditing is, analyzing, to dissect, to better the next steps. So like take it all in, like audit your life, like something like someone's auditing your financials. Like you like audit the daily disciplines, audit the routine, and try to refine and refine and refine and refine. What makes you feel fulfilled? What makes you feel like you have purpose? What drains you? Like what, and not in the moment, but like when you look back at it retroactively. And then like use that as the number one tool to set the directive of your life. And in that has to be, in my opinion, I think it's super powerful that the space is involved in that. But yeah. I'm curious to hear your take on it, Pat.
Yeah, we could definitely talk about this for a while. I think a couple of things. One, the thing you're talking about that I love, and it's something that I struggle with, I think we probably, a lot of us struggle with, is building slack into a day, or building slack into a week or a month or a year, right? It's so easy to fill everything up. And then I think that that's why we easily fall into burnout or exhaustion or whatnot, right? Because we haven't designed our day or our life with the recognition that it's the same thing as the gym. We get fitter by recovering as much, if not more, than we do by creating the stress in the gym. And it's the same thing outside of the gym. And so I think that that's, you know, massively important to think about. And I think the thing that this question really triggers for me is making sure that we make the distinction between being lazy and being still, right? We can use that word. I think we run into trouble when we don't make that distinction. And then when we're hanging out with friends, am I being lazy, or is there a point to this? And if we're not intentional about it, we talk about being intentional, you know, all the time, then it's easy to be lazy, right? It's easy to say, okay, I'm just going to sit here for 30 minutes and do nothing. Or I'm going to sit here and read this book. I'm going to have a conversation with a friend, whatever. And so I also think that that's an important distinction. And then just to answer your question about kind of how I do it, I've struggled with it since having kids, because kids take up a lot of the slack that, you know, you used to have before. But one thing that I've found kind of consistently works well for me is when I'm putting one of the kids down to sleep, oftentimes it's 15 minutes of quiet in a dark room. And I try to use those moments to do the kind of reflection you're talking about. Simply because that tends to be where I got 15 or 20 minutes. I can't leave. I can't go do work. I can't do something else. So that I find, at least most of the time, I can kind of take advantage of that space and that time to do the sort of work we're talking about.
Yeah. I love that. I love the intentionality. The intentionality is the big part for me, which you pointed to. That right there, for the person that answered this question, should be the answer. Like if you're doing this intentionally, like right on you, like this is like, go for the walk in the woods. You're not being lazy. Like sit on that chair in your living room and just like chill for a little, like that's okay. Like Netflix, like if that's what it is for you, if you need to, whatever it is. But I think it'd be really cool, Pat, we should do like a designing your day, a designing your life type episode. I think that'd be really cool.
I'll make a list. I'll make a note of that. Okay. Next question. About 2 weeks ago, I tweaked something in my back doing deadlifts. I got x-rays and the doctor said it was nothing more than a herniated disc. Aside from biking, benching, and pressing, what kinds of movements would you have an athlete do during their recovery from this? And I have just a follow-up question. When I read that, I was like, nothing more than a herniated disc. When I hear that, I think, well, that's actually something. Is a herniated disc not relatively serious? Because it doesn't seem like it, at least in the context of the question. So I'm just curious about that too.
I think they've been popularized as something that's pretty massive. Most herniated discs will heal themselves with time.
Okay.
Now I'm not a doctor. I'm certainly not a spine doctor. But that's from I had a back injury. I had a back fusion. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people that have had herniated discs, myself included. I know a lot of people that have had discectomies. Which is basically fixing a herniated disc. Mine was not. Mine was basically degenerative disc disease. They call it disease. I don't know why they call it a disease. It's just like I got injured in high school and then the juice ran out of the disc and there's bone on bone. So there wasn't much else to do except kind of fuse it together. A herniated disc can be just a herniated disc, but it also could be something really big that a simple procedure called discectomy can fix. Now, that's outside the scope of this question.
Yeah.
And we're doing a really good job of butchering the 2 minutes.
I was just looking at the clock too. We're terrible.
All right. So I'll do this one quick then. Okay. Movements to do with a back injury. And this person's right to ask this because it's the most limiting. Like you hurt your big toe, no big deal. You hurt your wrist, you hurt your knee, you hurt your ankle, you hurt your shoulder. You got a lot left. You hurt your back, not a lot left. Here's the things that coming back from my back injury, my back spinal fusion, the first things that I was able to incorporate were just what this question they were talking about. You know, it's a bench, it's the strict press, but strict pull-ups work really, really well if you have the strength. Biking, if you can do it, it's not everybody, but biking works. Even walking helps a lot. But then the best movement that I started incorporating was walking lunges. Eventually got to walking lunges. In the beginning, it was step back, reverse lunges, holding on to something, a part of the rig in the gym, your table, something else. Because your spine, unlike a squat where your pelvis tips under potentially and causes a butt wink and a lot of bad positions, especially for a herniated disc, in a lunge, because it's that, you know, your back stays much, much more neutral, but yet you are bringing yourself through bilaterally one side at a time through the complete range of motion of a squat. So it's a really, really good movement to incorporate in. It's something I recommend really early on for a lot of people coming back from back injuries. The next ones would be sled pulling. Sled pulling is great. You put the strap around your waist. It's below your legs and you go for pull. You go super, super heavy, not using your back, or you go light and long and get some really good cardio in. And then to that point, you could also do belt squats.
Mm-hmm.
So a weight dip belt, stand between two plyo boxes, strap some, strap two 70-pound kettlebells to it. And you can, it's kind of like they're called belt squats and there's a machine for it, but you don't need the machine.
Got it. Love it.
Okay. We're going to speed up. We're going to speed up these questions.
We're going to start talking much faster.
Yes.
How much time should I realistically expect to be preparing food in a week if I want to eat clean? How frequently should I expect to make trips to the grocery store? Obviously, that's a big depends, but
that would be my answer. It depends. Like, oh my gosh. Like, are you preparing?
Just
you. Yeah,
let's just assume that it's just single person, 24-year-old single person just trying to take care of themselves.
Yeah. Again, totally depends. But you could do this once a week. People do this in Sunday afternoons. That's not the way I operate at all. And you also, depending on where you live, don't need to go to the grocery store at all, which quarantine showed us. You get food delivered to you, which is what we do all the time through Instacart. So we don't even go to the grocery store anymore. It just shows up on our doorstep within 2 hours of ordering all the time. And then we prepare foods for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So one day. I'm probably not the right person to answer this question because the truth is I use Paleo Power Meals. Like food is delivered, prepared, because as we've talked about so many times, is the most valuable thing to me is my time and attention. Yeah. And if I'm spending time and giving attention to preparing food when I could be doing that with name 3 dozen other things that to me are more valuable to spend my time, it's not a matter of cost at that point because I'm buying my time and attention.
Yeah.
So that's, I think it's super valuable to, and again, if you like the food, I wouldn't do it if I didn't like it. But that's where I would go. Otherwise I would say, you know, if I was single and doing this on my own, I could do this in 30 minutes a night, you know, between the ordering online and preparing food for the next day. I would just, my answer is I would cook dinner. I would cook two dinners, and that next dinner is my lunch the next morning.
Yep.
Love that. Notice I said lunch the next morning. There's no such thing as, there's no such thing as breakfast. Breakfast is not a real meal.
Love that.
Breakfast is breaking a fast, breaking a fast. It is not cereal, donuts, and bagels and all the other crap.
Yeah. I would say my biggest depends on that would be if you don't care about exciting food, it's incredibly easy to do it.
Right.
To eat clean relatively quickly with rotisserie chicken, some bell peppers, some carrots, some cucumbers, some bananas and apples. You don't have to actually prepare food. It just becomes when one, if you get bored easily, and two, if food is like preparing food and eating food is like part of who you are. And it's, then it gets more complicated, gets more expensive, gets more time consuming.
You nailed it. Like go to the grocery, get a rotisserie chicken and two apples. It's like, it's so easy.
Do you think it's possible to open a successful affiliate, a CrossFit affiliate, as a part-time venture, meaning you have a full-time job and you work the affiliate before and after work?
You'd have to define what success is. And I think success means different things to different people.
Love that.
So if you mean stay in business, yes, you can do that. I would create some very, very, very low expectations for the affiliate. So I would want to be paying, you know, very, very little in rent, because the other side of that, can you have a thriving business? If that's different than successful. Do you have a thriving business that is, and to me, a thriving business is one where you don't have to worry about the financials. The owner doesn't have to worry about day-to-day operations and has a phenomenal reputation amongst the community. That's not just customers, a phenomenal reputation amongst the community. And you can define community however you want. In CrossFit, maybe it's amongst the entire CrossFit community. Maybe it's in your local neighborhood or surrounding towns. But those would be that to me is what thriving is. And to do that on a part-time basis, no, you cannot.
Yeah.
No, like definitely not.
Yeah. I love what you said first, just define success. Because if success is just like, I want it to be open so that it can be here versus I want to eventually work. I want it eventually to be what I do full time. Those are different roads and probably different, different demands. Next one. I'm a sports medical physician and L1 CrossFit coach. In the preventative point of view, we take functional sports into our family physician's practice. So we integrate personal trainers into our medical prescriptions. And he puts that in quotes.
Amazing.
Why, on the other side, don't gyms and affiliates integrate a physician into their lifestyle prescriptions?
Because there's not enough of you out there.
Mm.
That's why. Yeah. I mean, if there was more of you, like, dude, you move to Natick and you can work with our athletes, like absolutely 100%. The problem is, as this person knows as well as anything, the reason that they're outsourcing is because there's not synergistic viewpoints between the medical community and the health and fitness community. In fact, most medical professionals are out there to help fix sick people. Like that's what the medical community is set up to do. What the fitness and health perspective is to keep you from getting sick. And it's kind of like, well, if it didn't work out, let's send him to the doctor. Those two things, this person is awesome, like dialed, it should be working together. And there really shouldn't be that much difference between the two. Mm. It should be essentially like, hey, you do your general physical preparedness, but you also play your sport and see your specific sport coach. It should be the same type of thing, right? It's like you do this GPP thing, but then you have your medical coach. And it's just not as – we're going to get there. I just think that we're probably about a decade away from it where these things start to overlap, where you know, it's this idea that we kind of talked about. It's not about lifespan anymore. It's about health span. And if we can get people to live healthier longer, people will start to see those two things interacting. And the medical community will have more to do with the longevity aspect than we will, but we'll have more to do with the health inside of that lifespan. You know, because they're going to keep people alive. If your organs fail, like don't go to a CrossFit gym, like go get surgery. If you're in a car accident, you are bleeding out, like you need a doctor. If you have find a tumor the size of a softball in your neck, like go get your life saved by one of these amazing professionals. But it'll start to overlap more and more and more. And we'll start with people like this person.
Yeah. Love that. I just had my annual physical, and as happened last time, went through the whole thing, and he's like, okay, well, you're pretty boring. So he left, he kicked me out after like,
there's nothing minutes. To talk about.
No, exactly.
Right? That's the problem right now. There's nothing to talk about because they're not looking to optimize.
Yeah.
If there's no problems that they can find right now, problems, there's nothing to talk about, because what they do is they fix sick people. Yep. They're not trying to get you optimized.
Next question. My teenage niece and nephew are getting into CrossFit now and doing it two or three times a week. They're also really active doing gymnastics, soccer, various running events. As I'm more doing more hypertrophy training, so really watching my macros as per my body weight, they've noticed my results and asked about what, if any, macros they should be looking at as they are getting more serious into training. Is it the same as an adult? And more importantly, what about supplements? Should teenagers be taking things like multivitamins, creatine, cod liver oil, et cetera, et cetera?
Okay, cool question. No, it is not the same as an adult because they're still developing. We're done growing. And it happens, it's puberty. So if somebody has not gone through puberty, and give them a year or two after that, then it is different. But you can still have the conversation. They should be paying attention to what they're eating, and they can think about macros, but they'd only need to think about one, and it's protein. And all they need to do is get in, if they're active athletes, it's super simple. It's 1 pound of lean. It's 1 pound of lean protein for every pound of body weight. So your niece and nephew, they're 150 pounds. They should be trying to get 150 grams of protein a day. And that's the only thing that they need to worry about. The only thing they need to track. And then from there, the goal and the conversation then shifts from macros to, let's try to get this as well sourced as possible. So if you're having that at McDonald's, it doesn't count. It has to be from clean, well-sourced protein and better lean than not. So like, yeah, it might be from a grass-fed cow, but you're having ribs with barbecue sauce all over them. That's not what we're talking about.
Yep.
So we're trying to get it from wild caught fish, organic free range chickens, grass fed cattle, all that type of stuff. And then from there, steer them towards real foods, fruits and vegetables. So I call it produce and protein. It's like just that, produce and protein. And then from there, there is no supplements that they need to be taking.
Got it. Next one. I am a sophomore in high school, and I want to open my own CrossFit gym one day. Yeah. How important is it to have a college degree for that kind of job? I'm seeing more and more certification courses being available, and I would much rather take those than spend 4+ years in college and spending an insane amount of money.
Yeah. Don't go to college. Done.
Simple. Yep.
Yeah. For like, I can expand upon this as long as we want, but that's for what you're trying to do. You're not going to learn it in college. You go to college, have an amazing experience if you want to go do that. But what you just said was it's going to cost you an insane amount of money. Yeah. So you could have a great experience. It's, you do not need a college degree to open a successful CrossFit gym. Now that doesn't mean don't get educated. And the certifications are the bare minimum. Like getting your level 3 CrossFit, is the bare minimum. That's level 1, you have a heartbeat. Level 2, you showed up and paid attention. Level 3, you have a knowledge base. Level 4, I know you're a good coach. So I need you to have a level 3 before we have a conversation. And then from there, then now go get yourself so educated on everything else that you can in terms of life. Just, you know, Stephen Covey and Dale Carnegie and Seth Godin and Chris Voss and like just like, go and, you know, Ryan Holiday, like just go be a student of life, and any sort of business books, you know, just devour them.
That's really cool. I wonder if anybody's written a book for like, you know, soon to be wannabe teenage entrepreneurs and like that kind of advice. Cause that to me would be wildly cool and valuable. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder if anybody's done that.
I just think that I think in general, like the college thing is gonna, you know, and pandemic might have sped it up a little bit, but people paying $250,000 to take some classes that 60 per 5% are going to have very, very little relevance to what they end up doing. Mm-hmm. And who knows what the heck they want to do at age 18 anyway.
Yeah. Next question. How do you talk to athletes who think that they're destined to be the next Matt or Katrin, but just don't have the skills or strength? How can you help them set realistic expectations without killing their enthusiasm?
Okay. This question's important because I hate this question. Who are you to decide? Now, if this is age dependent, so if somebody comes up to you and says, I want to be Matt or Katrin and they're 47 years old, like, yeah, I get it. Like, let's handle them with kid gloves and try to make sure that they understand that that's no longer a possibility. I would even have that conversation with somebody that's introduced to the sport after the age of 26. Let's mm-hmm. do that. But somebody that is 19 through 24 that says that they want to be the next Katrin or Matt or Tia or whoever it is, and your response is, how do I tell them that they can't do that? God, I just don't want this person as my coach. Mm. Like, so what you're telling, so like, what if I want to back squat 500 pounds? You're going to tell me the same thing? What if I want to run a sub 3-hour marathon? What if I want to win a marathon? Like, your job is to help me get there. To me, what I hear there is I don't have the skill set as a coach to get this person there. So how do I temper their expectations of me? Mm. That's what I hear when I hear this question.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody has to win the CrossFit Games. In fact, two people do, a guy and a girl have to win the CrossFit Games. Why can't that be this person? It's going to be somebody. So I take the exact opposite approach of like, mm-hmm. everyone goes like, do you know what the chances are that, so you have 500,000 people that are participating in this sport. And then from there, the 0.00001% are the ones that make it. Yes. Yes. Why can't that person be part of that zero? There has to be some people. It has to be some people. They can't not have the CrossFit Games and they can't not have 30 athletes participating there. If it's not, if you're going to give me one of those 30, why can't it be one of you? Why can't you be one of the 30? Like, that's just, it's an insane approach to me of like, that's like saying someone saying like, I want to earn $10 million. And someone go, do you know what the chances are of you earning $10 million are?
Mm.
And then walking them through that instead of going like, all right, you do. And imagine if you know how to do that. You're like, you've done it with 12 other businesses. You go, all right, here's what it's going to take. Like, it's just a business plan. So if that's the case, it's just a plan to get someone to the podium. It's just a plan. And what you need is a motivated individual. That's it. You need a motivated individual that's willing to do the work. So if somebody's coming up to you and saying like, hey, I'm willing to do the work. And you go like, and your first response is, let's temper them.
Mm.
Find a new gym.
Are you guys seeing any trends or increases in retirees supplementing their retirement financially or just staying active by coaching CrossFit? And if not, do you feel like it would be a good fit for a retiree? I haven't seen many 55 plus gray haired coaches. How do you feel they would be perceived as coached by members?
Yeah, I think that this is a cool question. I like this.
Me too.
I think it's the future. I think it's coming. Just like ski instructors, right? Like there's the guys in their 20s and then there's the ski bums that have decided like to just pursue this as, you know, through their 20s and 30s. And then there's the retirees, the people that have like done it and they're now they're going to live in the mountains and do this as a supplemental income. I think it's coming. I just think we're still early. I just think it's a time thing. The sport started with kind of like this group. It didn't start with kids and it didn't start with oldies. It started with Greg Glassman coaching a bunch of 20 somethings.
Yep.
That's the way it started. But then it's having this, you know, the edges of the bell-shaped curve are just getting a little bit fatter and fatter and fatter. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing in our gym, like there, we have, 50-year-olds, in our gym that are coaches. They don't coach at our gym. They coach at other gyms, but, we have them. So it's happening.
Love that. I love it from a brand perspective. If you think about the kind of people who you want to attract into your gym and how much how much lower the barrier is to them saying yes if they walk in and they see somebody who looks like them. Mm-hmm. And that's across the board. That's if I'm a 40-year-old woman and I see another woman roughly in the same group and she's coaching, suddenly it means this place could be for me. If that person is representing the business and the brand and that person looks like me, well, man, there's a good chance that I could belong here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Whereas when I walk in there and I see a fleet of 24-year-old tattooed guys and girls and I'm 52, oh, is this place for me? Did I make a mistake? Did I walk into a place that I shouldn't walk into? So just the perception of it, I think is wild, could be wildly valuable for Jim.
I think people underestimate that aspect, Patrick. And I know you don't, you speak to this a lot about with your own, your functional branding side of things. It's like, do I belong here? I just really think that do I belong here is the goal of marketing. And to the goal in marketing and operations are completely overlap. So, cause you're who you hire for your coaching is a marketing play. And you speak to this, like there is no edges to what marketing is. And I use the example, like a few years ago, man, it was probably 10 years ago now, but, I got into, very short lived, shooting like a gun, like a pistol.
I remember that. Didn't you lock your gun in a safe and then lost?
And Matt Fraser had to bring it to Matt Fraser's house in Vermont. And he had to open it for me with a power tool.
Oh, that's amazing.
So that's how I knew I got
that part
right?
of the story.
Oh yeah. So I like locked it in a safe and like, but when I did that, I was like searching and like, you can see what these companies want to do. And honestly, we're experiencing the comp trend right now. Yeah. So when I would go to like, look at a website about like a shooting school or something like that, if I saw a bunch of like guys in tactical gear that were jacked up, with all like the scopes and you could tell that they were like dialed and, I was like, well, that's not for me.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter if it's like what the text says, it's because the imagery is like, I am not them.
So important.
If I saw a bunch of dudes in t-shirts and jeans, in dad jeans of all shapes and sizes, that look like me in the imagery, I'm like, oh, that's for me. And that's the course I would go to. And it's what we're kind of working through with Comp Train right now is Comp Train is not just for Katrin and Cole and Chandler. It is not, but that's all that we have imagery of.
Yep.
So because people do it, they look at it and they go, that's really cool. Like there's no doubting that, just like these tactical guys, but that's not me. And, it's one of the things that we have to be cognizant of and, moving forward as well.
Love that. Next question. I've got two more. I'm coming back from an overuse injury, not CrossFit related. I overtrained for a marathon, unknowingly causing a femoral stress fracture. It has taken me almost a year to get back to a place I can start impact and weight training again. I've only been able to swim for fitness so far. However, I'm a bit scared to start training again. I don't want to get re-injured. You talk a lot about pain versus discomfort. How can you tell the difference between pain from injury and discomfort from pushing yourself?
If it's orthopedic, it's pain.
Mm.
So if it's a joint, if it's a bone, if it's even like a strained muscle, if it's like nervy type stuff, if it's your neck, if it's your head, if it's range of motion related, that's all pain.
Mm.
Discomfort is this is hard, and I don't want to keep doing this.
Yeah.
That's the difference. They are not, you are not supposed to push through pain at the amateur, recreational, pursuing health level. You're moving backwards, period. Professional athletes push through pain. It's their job.
Mm.
We had an elite athlete roll their ankle on a trail run. They haven't missed a training session or a set yet. They work through that. Regular athletes, no, you don't work through that. Like you work around it. And this person, I respect that they took a year off to recover from it. And now they're looking to get back into it. A stress fracture in your femur, you can do more than just swimming.
Mm-hmm.
You can do pull-ups. You can do push-ups. You can do bench press. There's plenty of stuff that can be had there and you're training then. And training, you know, around helps speed up recovery. Not training through. I'm not saying go and do squats. I'm not saying go and do box jumps. I'm not saying go and keep running. I'm not saying train through. I'm saying train around. Mm-hmm. Train around pain, not through it.
Got it. Last question we've got. I love this question. Are the CrossFit Games events generally harder than training sessions? Or do the training sessions leading up to the games make the events themselves feel relatively okay?
Yeah, they make them feel relatively okay, honestly. These guys train incredibly hard. The games is lower volume than they do in training. Mm-hmm. They train with higher volume than they experience at the games. The games generally is between 2 and 4 workouts a day. Our athletes do more than that. And the training is really hard. Now, the difference is we cannot replicate in training the psychological effects of competing. And that's what makes the games the beatdown. Mm. It's called the psychobiological model. It's popularized by Matt Fitzgerald that we had on this podcast. And what ends up happening is it's the stress of the nervous system. And it's not just like stress. Okay, if you can mitigate stress, you're good. It's like, no, it's you don't get around it. It's like trying to get around like the thrusters are 135 pounds and being like, well, if I think different things, I won't have to do them. It's like you're at a competition. It's like you don't have an option. It's going to be there at a higher level than you've experienced before. We can do a lot of stuff to prepare for it, just like we do it on the physiological side. We can do a lot of stuff to prepare for it on the psychological side as well, but it's going to be there. And what we find, in fact, is that I understand the question. In my world, it's kind of like this is kind of a crazy question because we know how much training these guys do, but it makes sense because the athletes are so beat down from the games, not necessarily just from the volume. Yes, we do not do things like Atlanta, that workout. We do not have them do 300 pull-ups in a workout. That's a bad training effect. So workouts like that are over-programmed are just that. They're over-programmed. But it was the last – Castro's not an idiot. It's the last workout of the event. So they're ready for it. There are certain years that are more of a beatdown than others. You know, they did the unpartitioned Murph in 120 mm-hmm. degrees in vests at noon. That caused a lot of damage. But we've seen damage even at regionals. And people remember what regionals were. It was a 3-day event with 2 events a day. So that is such drastically reduced. These guys, it's not like we do these workouts. We do like different sessions and some are like strength pieces and others are accessory and others are workouts and others are monostructural, meaning like they go for runs or bike rides. But generally think of it as like they do like 3 to 5 workouts a day. Mm-hmm. In training. Regionals was only 2 workouts a day. And a lot of them were very low volume, 21:59 of ring dips and snatches, that type of thing, like really low mm-hmm. volume. And the athletes would be so wrecked from regionals, sore, beat up, exhausted. It's not because they didn't train appropriately for it. It's because of the psychological dump that happens after that event. So we recognize that as well. And we mitigate it by tapering beforehand and doing appropriate deloads post competition.
Love it. All my friend, thank you. That was great. I love these episodes. Thank you to everybody out there who sends us questions. You can find me on Instagram at PS Cummings. Drop me a DM. I will add it to our long list and we'll get to it as soon as we can. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your ratings and your reviews. Ben and I will be back with another episode of Chasing Excellence next week. You can get every episode of Chasing Excellence wherever you listen to your podcasts or on YouTube. Until next time, thank you for listening.